title. Undifferentiated Brown Stuff. Diljit Nagra and Traveling Poetry. Author Anushmita Mohanty. It was January 2019, in a university where racism could be subtle, but pervasive, like background white noise. I received a reading list for a poetry course I was going to take the next semester. In every class, we would go through two poetry collections, grouped together because both poets cared about the same things. Motherhood. Modernism. Ancient Greece. Each week was white poet and white poet, white poet and white poet. Until the very last class, Citizen, an American Lyric, by Claudia Rankine, and Loop of Jade, by Sarah Howe. No topic was specified for the week, but it might as well have been race. These two poetry collections have no shared themes. Rankine combines traditional lyric poetry with media and images to mediate powerfully on anti-black racism, microaggressions, and the experience of being black in the USA. Meanwhile, Howe, a Chinese-British poet, discusses her relationship with her roots and heritage as she journeys back to Hong Kong, finding answers, history, and awkwardness. We were, essentially, carrying out a reductive reading practice where poets of color were only considered useful for their political and social ideas. By categorizing these poets in a way that ran counter to their intended purpose, we were fundamentally misreading their poems. I encountered Diljit Nagra's poetry collection Look We Have Coming to Dover while I was thinking through these ideas. I had never seen a poet combine Punjabi and English like he did before, and I could feel how much fun he was having with language and poetry. To me, Dover was grappling with similar questions. How can poets of color writing within a Western tradition be true to their own cultural background while not selling out their community? Will poets ever be classified according to their own will, and not by place of birth? And finally, can poems resist attempts at categorization and control their own life out in the world? The poem took the subway, the idea of poetry that travels is apparent, quite literally, in Yabos. One of the poems in Dover. A group of men see the poet reading a book on the London Tube and react with suspicion. It is not the narrator himself, however, but the poetry collection he is reading that they direct racist insults at. Judging the book by its owner, their reaction to Irish poet Paul Muldoon's collected poems is some packy shit, like E.E.'s Lucan in 2. By depicting this racist encounter, Nagra dramatizes the everyday processes of comparisons at work, between people and cultures, poetry and poets. This incident is as violent as it is common. The London Metro has often been a site for racists. By using it as the setting for Yabos, Nagra indicates how frequent the experience of being compared is, how it is always loaded, and often violent. Nagra and Muldoon are both poets published by Faber and Faber, with one difference: Nagra is one of the only two poets of color published by the company. In Yabos, he writes, "A right savage I was, sozzled to the nose with sprightly Muldoon, squeezed into the communal sweat of a Saturday tube home." The narrator of the poem, borrowing ironically from colonial language, identifies himself as a savage, squeezed together with Muldoon in the compartment, and the stanza. Muldoon's sharp lemon-skinned poems are misidentified by the crew. They instinctively compare it to its reader, and the Irish poetry being read by the Punjabi British poet in the London Metro, the circular heart of Britishness, is reduced to a single racist jeer. This comparison occurs because of preconceived suspicions the Yabs hold around race. It serves to police Britishness, making it synonymous with whiteness, and equates two different cultural backgrounds along one erroneous standard. Published in 2007, Look We Have Coming to Dover, Diljit Nagra's first collection focuses on what it means to be an Indian author who works squarely within the English poetic canon. He writes about the lives of first and second generation Indian migrants, mobilizing issues of assimilation, integration, and intergenerational conflict. Nagra's collection asks crucial questions about contemporary poetry written by minority ethnic authors in the global north. How can the resources of the Western poetic form be used politically to write about racial and structural inequalities? Is such a thing possible without further shoehorning poets into restrictive conventions? Poetry has also sometimes been perceived as notoriously local and regional, with T.S. Eliot calling it stubbornly national, and W.H. Auden branding it as the most provincial of the arts. Can contemporary poetry contest the boundaries of nationalism and economic globalization? Crafted through the act of comparison, relying on metaphors and similes, poetry animates the constant human endeavor to form connections by drawing on shared traits and experience. As Paul Hostovsky writes about his stepdaughter's penchant for the word, like, everything is like something, not exactly but sort of. This is precisely why poetry lends itself especially well to Nagra's project of articulating the invisible violence of everyday comparisons. He writes love poems in Dover that hint at strains of violence and unpack the way people and stories are compared. In Darling and Me, the first poem of the collection, a newlywed comes home after a long day at work to a romantic evening with his patiently waiting wife. De barman's bell done dinging, so I phone de dimply missus, putting some gas on kooka, bonus pay I bring in. Downing drink, I giddily home for pakiza record, to which we go, tango, for roti, to kitchen, shirumba. Nagra uses half rhymes and alliteration for rhythm, the words de done and dinging. In the first line, the rhyme of go and tango, and the differently pronounced R sounds in roti and rumba, create a musical effect. Song and dance are motifs in the poem, with a variety of dance forms being mentioned, disco, bhangra, bolero, and tango. Combined with the invocation of pakiza, a sweeping romance, these devices set up a sing-song, romantic atmosphere, creating an encompassing sensory experience. Soon, a strain of menace enters the marriage and the poem. When discussing the indignities of Jimmy John's girlfriend bringing his dinner to the pub, the husband mentions that his wife would receive a solo punch and a smack if she were to embarrass him in public. I could never quite pin down the character of the husband. Does the poem hint at him being a domestic abuser, making the whirlwind married month crueler than it appears? 2. A poem and its writer walked into a bar. The epigraph to Dover, the second instance of intertextuality, is an excerpt from George Orwell's essay, Marrakesh, that reads, "The people have brown faces, besides, there are so many of them. Are they really the same flesh as yourself? Do they even have names? Or are they merely a kind of undifferentiated brown stuff?" The epigraph poses the rhetorical questions that the poems respond to, as Nagra satirizes Orwell's Orientalism and his inability to move past the limits of empire. It also expresses his fears about the representation of his community, and about his own reception as a poet. Will they ever be recognized as individuals, or will their identity always be predetermined as merely a kind of undifferentiated brown stuff? In Dover, the dramatis personae burst on stage. They are seen and heard, declaring clear identities and opinions in dramatic monologues. Even in seemingly similar poems, no two characters are the same. Differentiation, then, is one of the key aspects of the volume. This passage has been quoted in Edward Said's Orientalism, where Said writes, "Aside from the picturesque characters offered European readers in the exotic fiction of minor writers, the non-European known to Europeans is precisely what Orwell says about him. He is either a figure of fun, or an atom in a vast collectivity designated in ordinary or cultivated discourse as an undifferentiated type called Oriental, African, yellow, brown, or Muslim." Said's comments lie at the heart of Nagra's project, as we see in Darling and Me. The trope of the Sikh immigrant as a figure of fun is dismantled. The first line of the poem is taken from the iconic ringing of the barman's bell in T.S. Eliot's The Wasteland, rewritten in non-standard Punjabi English, or Punglish. It tells the reader that they are on unfamiliar linguistic footing. In my classes, this was a poem white professors didn't know how to read out, as Rachel Gilmore writes, speaking English like a native. Looks very different here. Why did I enjoy this reclamation of the English language? This type of non-standard pronunciation, as Nagra has pointed out in interviews, was mostly used in television programs that mock the figure of the South Asian learning English. These shows impact ideas of representation in the UK. They portray the migrant as an intruder into the myth of a homogeneously white, English-speaking nation. They also portray a community with differences in access, class, caste, and gender as an undifferentiated type called Oriental. Humor moves beyond reductive caricatures as Nagra has fun with language. It plays on sounds and intonations. It is poetry. Darling and Me forms a set with the last poem of the collection, Sing Song, which is a more poignant love poem. Set behind the shelves of a 9-to-9 shop, the poem depicts the good-humored canoodling of a newlywed couple. It is light-hearted and romantic, as it describes the life of an Indian shop owner and the symbiosis between economics and love. From Be Still Each Night She Say, How Much Do You Charge For Dat Moon Baby? From Be Still Each Night I Say, Is Half De Cost Over You Baby? From Be Still Each Night She Say, How Much Does Dat Come To Baby? From Be Still Each Night I Say, Is Priceless Baby? The poem revels in the comic and poetic potential of working with a hybrid of two languages, as puns peep out, and words from different cultures dance into rhymes. The shopkeeper narrates, Cos up de stairs is my newly bride vi sharin chapati vi sharin de chutney after vi have made love like vi rowing through Putney, Sing Song. Is one of the delightful poems in the volume in which cultural collisions are a source of fun and possibility. Nagra plays with puns that traverse linguistic and geographical distances to come together, as Putney means wife in Punjabi, and is also a locality in the UK, and Pinny means turban, and also apron. The rhyme set up by Chutney Putney Pinny animate Alicia Stallings' point in Presto Manifesto. Rhymes may be so far apart, you cannot hear them, but they can hear each other, as if whispering on a toy telephone made of two paper cups and a length of string. In this collection, poetry becomes a way of signaling, we are not alone. 3. All your poets are other. Nagra has frequently expressed anxiety about the reception of his work, and is aware that his poetry is seen as a newsletter from a tiny community. Despite working with Western forms such as the Terza Rima, writing about British experiences, and being published in Britain, he is likely to be compared to poets from other cultures, owing to his Indian origin. This fallacy within comparative acts of grouping others together and presenting a unidimensional view of their work is explored in Kaba Questions the Ontology of Representation, the Catch-22 for Black Writers. In the poem, Nagra uses Kaba to question the process of categorizing poets into other cultures in the GCSE anthology. The poem begins, I give my boy dis freebie of a silky blue GCSE anthology with its three poets from three parts of Britain, ye HBC of Annie Blake Clark, showing us how to think and feel? For part two, us as a bunch of Gunga Din's Jew group, poems from other cultures and traditions, referencing Nisim Ezekiel's The Night of the Scorpion, which was included in the section, he asks why Indian culture is represented only in terms of superstition and irrationality, since we have doctors and rocket rickshaw ambulance, and how this representation will affect Kaba's son's self-image. Will he become a coconut? Kaba also says, all your poets are other, referring to the anthology's co-option of Heaney, Austin, and Clark, thus showing how British culture, which is segregated from other cultures, is also made up of contributions from Irish and Welsh poets. Nagra has detailed the reasons for his reluctance to be compared to fellow contemporary Indian poets like Ezekiel. This kind of comparison, for him, leads to the segregation of Indian writers, to the detriment of Anish Kapoor's statement, being an artist is more than being an Indian artist. The poem, Booking Khan Singh Kumar, for instance, was written in a climate in which art and publishing industries were facing criticism for rolling out diversity initiatives that were only ticking ethnic boxes. The name Khan Singh Kumar in the poem, a cultural implausibility that mixes Muslim, Sikh, and Hindu surnames, sharply satirizes attempts to equate different groups of people. The booking of the title implies the way the author is hired, put on display, and also how he is made into a book on a literal level. Must I wear only masks that don't sit for a Brit? Would you blush if I stripped from my native skin? Should I beat on my chest? I'm a ghetto poet who discord his kind as they couldn't know it. Linguistic exoticism has to fit into market demands, and is palatable to a certain extent. The poet wonders how far he can go, and how radical his poetry can truly be. Underneath the satire, however, lurks very real fear and self-loathing, as Nagra asks if his popularity will continue if he stops writing about Indian language and culture. This leads, then, to the question of whether writing by authors of color should unhesitatingly be labeled diverse, and whether it is possible for them to just write. 4. The poem Station has arrived. These complicated experiences, embedded in poetry, show how cultural collisions can lead to trauma around identity and belonging. Nagra is not assigning a reparative function to poetry. Instead, poems become spaces where messiness and gaps can be understood and used to form connections that might not be possible elsewhere. Restlessness emerges as a key ambition, with linguistic instability, constant trickery, and poems that refuse to settle. This helps us understand the quiet, brief peace journey within Dover. That seems at odds with the loudness of the rest of the collection, but nonetheless, was a poem I printed out and put up on my wall. There you go with your rucksack of clean clothes and a flat rose in your notepad, wandering for the dream you had where all the things you spilled were back in their bottles, brighter than ever. The metaphor of the journey brings us back to the subway this discussion started on, and poetry is used to initiate a reconciliation. While Dover persistently criticizes cultural appropriation and fetishization, it also imagines a more hopeful world. Its arresting characters give us glimpses into an imagined community that is loud, inviting, and fun. Nagra's poems, which reach out to other literary works across time and space, are an antidote to feelings of division and fragmentation. Reading this collection reminded me of what poetry can achieve, an effect articulated in another poem about a subway, Louise Gluck's October. "You are not alone," the poem said, "in the dark tunnel.